After nearly 30 years with the Vancouver Fire and Rescue Service, Rod Salas was diagnosed with PTSD. Instead of finding the help that he needed, he faced a years-long struggle against a bureaucracy that offered checkbox solutions instead of healing. Rod joins us now to share his journey alongside Derek Henko, who is the Chief Mental Health Officer at Kelowna-based Diversified Rehabilitation Group. That is where Rod finally got the treatment that he needed. This is an important conversation, gentlemen, one that's much needed. Rod and Derek, thank you both for joining us about this morning.
Thank you for having me, Gary.
Rod, can we start with you? Can you share your story with us?
Sure, Gary. I got diagnosed in 1995 with PTSD, depression and anxiety disorder. But however, the whole process started actually, the time that I was actually hired was in 1995, is that as you start your training back then, you didn't really have any mental health training, no psychological training and what to look for and whatever. So as firefighters and first responders, we create this mechanism of armor, and the armor is that we just suck it up and it's part of the job and we don't talk about our feelings. So then we fast forward to 2019, and I became this person of mechanism of armor, and I became very bitter, became angry, shut off, disassociation, didn't talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. I was a bully because I took the process of I'm going to get you before you get me to protect myself. So in 1995, I finally became this person and full of shame and guilt and didn't like. And so I reached out for help, and I reached out to and WCB, obviously. And at that time, there were a program called Boreal. And Boreal was a program for first responders. And I, my captain of mental health wellness said, hey, ask WCB to go to this program because all of our guys go to this program. Well, I asked them, look, there's this program. And they said, no, we're going to tell you where to go. Mm-hmm. And so they sent me to another program. It was via Zoom and whatnot. And their program was exposure therapy. Well, exposure therapy was something like, okay, Rod, you sit down at a bus stop and you watch the apparatus go in and out of the out of the hall, and you deal with your feelings from a grounding standpoint or whatever. Little did they know is that while I sat at that bus stop, it's the same bus stop that I had done CPR on a dead person. I had pulled somebody out of the bathroom behind me in the Starbucks in the bathroom. I had pulled a young girl out from underneath wheels of a truck, and two blocks down was where I had a coworker commit suicide. My point being is that the triggers that I had were thousands and thousands and thousands of thousands of triggers. Mm-hmm. Exposure therapy wasn't helping me with that specific, with those thousands and thousands. It was one particular. And so the next step was for me to go sit in the hall in the back of an apparatus with my coworkers, as I was the captain of that hall. That was very humiliating and shameful. So the exposure therapy, to deal with that was to run and hide, disassociate. I didn't want a part of that. So that was just the beginning of it. So that's just the start of it, Gary.
And I know that you've just received a letter back from the provincial government, an upsetting letter that I understand, and I want to get to that too, Rod, but so that people understand, that listeners understand, you know, part of what you just described there, but the process that happened to you afterwards. I read the letter you have written to the premier, and you mentioned that 10 years ago that you thought, and I'll quote you here, we had paved a better path with presumptive legislation. Can you explain that for us and how that you thought that could help you?
Yes, with the presumptive, they made a mandate of that they would actually be able to fast track people that had signs of PTSD, and that they didn't have to go through the jump through all the hoops. And because of that, one of the reasons was because of moral injury. And what they are finding is, or what we're finding is that, yes, the injury, their psychological mental health injury, not only to do with the calls and whatnot, but it's also the clerical and the politics involved, which creates moral injury. And in my case, we're talking 2 to 3 years for me to actually be able to get the help that I actually needed. And during that time, the wear, the toll it took on me, my family, my friends, my children was, I was went to a down into a deep, deep depression. And in a lot of cases, that it's with that moral injury and the time is that people can't handle it, and they end up ending their lives or breaking marriages or not having good relationships with their families. So, and I know Derek can talk, maybe talk a little bit more about that, but that was just in my case. It took a long process, to a point where it took me a year to get my second psychological assessment, and I finally phoned them and they didn't even have me on record. I was waiting for 11 months, and I said they didn't have me on record to get that second psychological assessment. I phoned back my case manager, says, "Oh, I'm sorry, we forgot to put it in.
Wow.
This is 11 months." And within 2 days, I had that second psychological assessment because they forgot to do it.
Derek, let's bring you into this conversation. Rod spoke of that therapy, and that it involved sitting outside the fire hall, watching those trucks, which, as he said, only made things worse for him. This really seems like a sort of a one-size-fits-all approach, and perhaps counterproductive. How common is Rod's story, Derek, and what's your opinion of what he's been through?
Way too common. I hear this more several times in a month from individuals who are trying to get help, and all of that's related because it's a cookie cutter. We should be meeting people where they are at, especially when it comes to first responders. Be very culturally informed when it comes to first responders cultures, understanding their occupational stress injury and providing a trauma-informed treatment. And obviously in Rod's case, that didn't happen. I hear this from other clients who are trying to access program like ours, and they are being denied this opportunity because we are following a cookie cutter approach.
And Rod, for you, you spoke about that WorkSafe BC plan or WCB at the time, I guess, where you had to sit in the back of the apparatus, and being a captain, that was difficult for you. Can you talk about the psychological toll of that, having to deal with that when clearly these plans were not helping you?
Yes, well, you could imagine that on my own shift, I'd go back into the hall, and I was I was the senior officer in that on my shift. I was the captain. I sat in the right seat. All of a sudden, I book off with a mental wellness disorder, and now I come back and I'm sitting in the back of the seat with a probationer, and the probationer's looking at this captain beside him, and there's another a pooled in captain in my seat. And they're kind of going, "Well, what are you doing here?" Could you imagine how humiliating and shameful that is to me? I'm talking to a guy that's 6 months on and telling him that I have it's not it doesn't look good. Not only that, coming into the hall, excuse me, and somebody else is running my shift, and it's my own crew members that are there watching. "Well, what are you doing? You're there for 4 hours because you're." It's just doesn't it just wasn't the proper fit. I asked to maybe do a ride along with a battalion chief or go into training, and that was denied to me. So this was their approach, and I didn't last very long. My biggest thing was again was the disassociation and running away, and that's what I did. Eventually, I ended up quitting the job, leaving the job, and selling my house and moving up to a isolated area with me and my wife in the side of a hill, right? It was just yeah.
Derek, in reading Rod's letter, noted that he had to fight for 3 years to get into your program because it wasn't, quote, board vetted. How do you navigate that system where a case manager's vetted list overrides a psychologist's professional recommendations?
Well, within the system, I really think as you know, I'm a former injured worker. I used to work for WCB system in Manitoba, so I understand that. And from my expertise being on both sides of the fence, really having that culturally informed training for case managers within their agency, and then focus on providing trauma-informed treatment. Focus what it's helping the individual to get better based on their needs versus what we think. And we are getting information from a specialist who is recommending specific treatment. Follow those recommendations, specifically when it comes to the first responders situation, because they are helpers. It's really hard for them to ask for help. And if you don't do that, there's a sense of betrayal and you're just re-traumatizing them and and you increase their suffering and getting that back, getting them back on track, it gets that's much harder.
In conversation with Rod Salas, he's a former Vancouver fire rescue captain, nearly 30 years with the service, was diagnosed with PTSD, and instead of finding that help that he needed, he instead faced a years-long struggle against a bureaucracy. He finally did get the help, the treatment that he needed through the Diversified Rehabilitation Group based here in Kelowna, and the Chief Mental Health Officer, Derek Shenko, is also with us. Rod, I wanted to ask you one of the things that I found shocking that you had written about was that you were denied a program specifically for first responders. You were told to instead attend an addiction center despite never having an addiction. How did that affect your motivation to keep fighting for your own recovery?
Well, the motivation was always to do with that I was going down this rabbit hole, and either I lose my marriage and I lose my life, or I continue doing this. I was at the rock bottom. And what bothered me about the addiction program was that they wanted me to put me in an addiction program with where I didn't have addiction. Not only that, but they also wanted me to do a go into the program which was 6 to 7 hours a day. And then after that, 6 to 7 hours a day, they'd go, okay, jump in your car and go stay at this hotel. Now I'm heightened. And I've been at this for, for 20, over 27 years. And they're telling me to take all these emotions to an unsafe place at a hotel and deal with it. With Diversified, I was in a 5-week in-house program where I knew that I was safe. I knew that I could deal with my emotions. I had counselors at my fingertips. And not only that, but I had like-minded people that were going through the same thing as me. We could talk, we could cook together, we ate together, we did all that together. And they wanted me to do this other program, and it wasn't going to work. That's because it's just not safe. And it took me the cur you know that's what's disappointing about this letter from the Ministry of Labor, Gary, is that I finally had the courage to step out and talk about this. And my family's out there. My son's a police officer. My name's out there. My wife's out there, and we're putting our and we and I get a letter back to the Ministry of Labor that they recognize this problem. Well, what do they recognize? Do they recognize that all first responders get PTSD, or do they recognize the actual mental health struggles that you deal with on a minute-to-minute basis? The Rolodex spins in a person's head over and over and over until they just want that Rolodex to stop and go away. So it was really disappointing in the letter that I got back is that they didn't really acknowledge the real systematic or system breakdown. And not only that, but the mental health struggles that we as first responders go through. And not only that, but your family. So and then at the end they go, well, we'll meet with WCB and bring it up, basically. So now all these emotions come back to me, right? The shame, the guilt, the anger. All these emotions, but now I have I have the resources and the know-how on how to deal with these emotions, right? Thanks to Diversified.
I read that letter, Rod, and then it is. It's disappointing. It's discouraging. It's disconnected. What needs to change, Rod, in your opinion? How do we remove those barriers that you're speaking of?
Well, I think what needs to change is that they need to actually believe and have the case managers need to be trained better. The trace ma case managers are on this other side of the phone with a checklist, and if you don't say the proper words, they're not checking off the box. Well, in first responders, we don't we're stoic. We don't we don't trust very well. We don't So all these it's very difficult to trust people. And so they got to understand that we're in a position of defense mechanisms. They got to understand our culture and the stigma better. That could be just the start. I'm sure Derek can talk a little bit more about that, but that's just the start, to get the proper help you need. Be more open and fast track. I don't need to wait 3 years to get the proper help. Right. Some people don't make it through. I know a lot of firefighters that don't make it to the other side. right? I'm fortunate enough to be able to have the family support and my friend and a couple friends support and to be able to get through it, right? So
Derek, what is the psychological, the emotional cost when the system denies effective treatment early on, or in Rod's case, decides it knows better?
as Rod mentioned himself, the re-traumatization hit him very hard, then increased the intensity and the duration of suffering, making that the recovery even much harder. It creates that component of moral injury when you lose the faith in the system that it's there to help you, and puts you in that dark hole, rabbit hole, or dark hole, depression, anxiety, all of that, and increases your PTSD symptoms. In addition to that, in terms of, and Rod briefly mentioned this, his ability to bounce back, return to work, and be aware that there are people that he can count and rely on that can help him to return to work and return to life was just trashed. And as he mentioned, also it raises the danger of suicide thoughts and behaviors for many, as Rod himself mentioned, didn't make it.
There was a study, national study done a few years ago. It was published in the Canadian Journal of Psychiatry that found 45% of nearly 6,000 public safety personnel right across the country, that includes municipal, provincial police, RCMP, firefighters, paramedics, correctional workers, dispatchers, screened positive for symptoms consistent with at least one mental health disorder. That's roughly, as I understand the article, roughly four times higher than the diagnostic rate for the general Canadian population, which is reading here about 10%, according to the study. Derek, what's your message to government to change this?
First message would be to acknowledge pain that first responders and frustration that they are going through for not receiving the right help and in a timely fashion. And simple thing, fix it. It's not that challenging to fix that. Eliminate those barriers to care. Allow people to go to the programs that meets their needs. And make sure when you send them to the right appropriate specialist that they are trained to provide the support for first responders in terms of more occupational stress injury, and the same for case managers, that they know how to talk to first responders when they are reaching out for help, and they are there for them to offer that help. So this government, I strongly believe, has the power to reinforce this and hold those agency accountable to be there for those first responders who need that so important help.
Rod, reading from your letter to the premier, to the province, you said that you're sharing your story, not to blame, but to call for change that will remove those barriers to care that are just simply too high and for too many, and you have that fear that it may be costing lives. How concerned are you with the generations of first responders that are coming up behind you?
Yeah, well, I can only talk with the because I'm in good contact with Vancouver Fire and Rescue Service mental health program, and I know that they're doing a way better job as far as when probationers come in now, and they do specific training for that. They can do what they can do on their end. However, when the active firefighter goes to WCB, it's in W Workers' Compensation Board. And going back to what we were talking a little bit earlier, is that when I first went in there, they had a mandate. Okay, you have 6 weeks. We got to get back to work. In my case, they offered another 4 week of 10 weeks, like as if they were doing me a favor. At no point did they say, "Let's get you better so that you can go back to work and maintain and be main and can maintain your workload." It was all about time, right? And so for me, I think it's the fire departments are doing a better job, but I think Workers' Compensation Board needs to do a better job.
Rod, Derek, thank you for your time here. We're unfortunately out of time. Rod, wish you continued success. I hope that the province is paying attention. Thank you for sharing your story. Extremely courageous. And Derek, thank you for being here as well and providing that support and your thoughts. Thank you both again.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's Rod Salas and Derek Shenko. Rod is a former Vancouver Fire and Rescue Service captain, 30 years with the department, was diagnosed with PTSD, had an uphill battle trying to get his treatment, and finally did get it at Diversified Rehabilitation Group in Colony here that's headed up by Derek Shenko. And he has sent a letter to the premier and to the province looking to remove those barriers so that first responders get that treatment that they need and not to have to fight those battles as well.